Well, what is going on? There was no podcast on Friday. I got a little sick on Thursday. Didn't have the energy. I'm not exactly the toughest cat, so I was terrified. I was getting the flu. Attacked it with vitamin C. I think I avoided it. But I'm good. But there was no podcast Friday. So what I've been thinking about doing, because I have so many messages in my inbox, making this basically entire podcast the Middlecoff Mailbag. And you can get up into the Middlecoff Mailbag anytime you want. I do it on every podcast. But I got so many questions, I'm just going to try to clear out the inbox. You can go to at John Middlecoff. That's my Twitter handle. That's my Instagram handle. But where I answer these questions is from Instagram. So you go to my Instagram, you slide up in those DMs, and I answer your questions. But before we get into the Middlecoff Mailbag, I just wanted to hit on two things really quick. I was pretty fired up to talk about this on Friday, but again, my toughness scale, one time I broke my toe. This old apartment I used to live in, I like wasn't paying attention, and all I did was had my shoes off, and I ran into the wall. And I ended up going to the doctor, and that doctor had been the doctor for the Raiders and the Warriors and the A's. Like, he knows what professional athletes' pain tolerance. And I asked him after I broke my toe. I could barely walk. It was my big toe. I was in so much pain. I'm like, if I was a starting right tackle for the Raiders or the Niners, would I be able to play on Sunday? And he looked at me and laughed. He's like, yeah, of course you would. And it just, so that's relative to my pain tolerance. So I can't afford to get sick. But I avoided it, and now we're here. So we're just going to go Middlecoff Mailbag. But Colin touched on something on last week, either on Wednesday or Thursday. It might have been Wednesday, about Russell Wilson and how Ciara and some people in his camp, the agent talk, want him to go to the New York Giants. And I believe in agent talk, and I believe it matters. And they have a lot of power in the whole grand scheme of things, because players... probably one of the only places in business where, I mean, these players make so much money. A guy like Russell Wilson's making $30-35 million, his next contract plus $1 million. This contract was making $20+ million. Look at these NBA players. I'm seeing it in my own backyard. Kevin Durant's like, stop asking me about free agency. It's like, Kevin, your agents are the one planting the stories, and no one cares about these random games. So yeah, we're going to ask you about free agency. Well, in baseball and basketball, free agency really matters a lot. That word really resonates. You're like, damn, Mike Trout is going to be a free agent in 2 years. Damn, Kevin Durant's going to be a free agent this year. That matters. In football, it doesn't mean a damn thing. It literally doesn't mean anything. And I say it all the time, we as fans benefit, because our best players, even if they want to leave, if I want to keep them, they're not leaving. It's you can call it un-American, you can call it whatever you want, anti-employee. It's a shitty rule for good players, because you want to hit free agency. You'd make more money. You know, now in the NBA, there's a cap on how much you can make, and in baseball, there's not, and we just saw Manny Machado got $300 million. But I believe Colin, and clearly he knows more people in the agent world than I'll ever know, so this story to me is real. But the reality of the story is, it's not up to Russell Wilson. So if John Schneider and Pete Carroll don't want to get rid of Russell Wilson, which he's the best player in the history of their franchise, is there even a close second, honestly? Like, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. You get a Hall of Fame quarterback in the history of your franchise, for the most part, that guy's going to be the best player in the history of your franchise. He's 30 years old. He's just kind of stuck in Seattle, at minimum. He'd play out this year in his contract. They'd franchise him 2 years in a row. And hell, they'd probably franchise him a third time. Like, unless you could work out some crazy deal where they loved Kyler Murray or something this year, which I just can't see happening. Because they already have Russell Wilson in the peak of his powers. And the team's good. And I also think that if you're the Seattle Seahawks, even if you're like, God, he probably would like to be in a bigger market. Even though in football, in NFL, like, Russell Wilson's so damn famous. He's on countless ad campaigns. He already makes just a ton of money. Like, financially, I don't know how much more he'd make in New York. But it can't be argued he would make more in New York. But at the end of the day, he doesn't control the situation. And the other reality is, Seattle would be willing to pay him whatever he wanted. They got private jets. Get a G4. Have Ciara hop on it and fly to New York. So... story's fun and it's cool. And if it was baseball or basketball, that story would be 50 times bigger because the player would be in control. It's why when the Knicks story with Kevin Durant has taken on a life of its own. Because if he wants to go to the New York Knicks, he's going to the New York Knicks. If Russell Wilson wants to go to the New York Giants, me or you are just as likely to be on the New York Giants as him next year. Shitty part about being in the NFL. And then the Combine is this week. I wasn't able to make it just because some other business things that I have to handle this week. But it's a really big week. And I think by Friday's show, the best part about this week is it's basically the start of free agency and trades. And you have all these GMs in the same building. You have all these coaches that are also decision makers in the same building sitting down and talking to each other about player transactions. So whether it's Antonio Brown, whether it's Odell Beckham, you're going to see a lot of trades. And it's a really, really exciting time for the league in terms of movement. This is kind of when the league makes a big muscle flex for the next month. I know the NBA thought that they had a big week leading into the Super Bowl when Anthony Davis, the trade rumors, well, guess what? He didn't get traded. You know, it was all fluff. Like, things actually happen. People are going to get traded. Big names are going to get traded. Big free agents, because free agency in the NFL is a little overrated, as I just talked about with Russell Wilson, because of the franchise tag. Like, DeMarcus Lawrence is not going to hit free agency. Jadeveon Clowney, more than likely, is not going to hit free agency. The top players just don't hit the market. So there's a lot of hype, and there's, I think, over $1 billion worth of available money to buy players, but there just aren't the players on the market. A lot of, you know, B and C tier level guys. Your blue chip all pro guy is just not hitting the market. It's even last year, the Khalil Mack trade was like unheard of. Usually the team that drafts you, you know, the Rams, you just pay Aaron Donald. Most teams, every team in the league would have just paid Khalil Mack. Even Amari Cooper. All these guys get extended. So I think at the end of the day, what really is fun about the Combine is you start getting a lot of buzz about trades and transactions. And then we also find out the measurements, because that does matter. I know Twitter, because the average guy on Twitter is 5'9". Let's call it what it is. A lot of scouts are shorter people. They root for the overachiever. I'm the opposite. You know, I'm like 5'10". I hate midgets. I root for big guys. I like scouting bigger players. You know, I'm not really into the little overachiever, you know, Johnny Tryhard. But I do think they kind of separate themselves over this next week at the Combine. How tall you are, how much you weigh, how fast you are, how agile you are, and just what you look like on person. Because your tape speaks for itself. So if you're a really good player at Oklahoma or LSU or Bama or USC or whatever, I know you're good. But now, what do you look like? Do you look the part? Do you carry yourself the part? Like, this is the big leagues now. We pay a premium for you. We're going to draft you high. We're going to pay you a lot of money, and we expect you to succeed. I got to get a feel for your personality, even if it's just kind of a snapshot. You know, I don't get that much time around you, but it's the first time every head coach in the league is meeting all these guys. And for the underclassmen, the guys that didn't get the chance to go to the Senior Bowl, it's the first time that all the general managers get to meet all the underclassmen. And most of the top players, typically in a draft in the top couple rounds, tend to be juniors. So it's not like when you go to a school, and a lot of GMs don't get to make school calls over the years, you know, over the year because they're traveling with their NFL team, that you're just not allowed to talk to underclassmen. Because at the time, you don't know if the underclassmen are going to go pro. And it's just, it's kind of frowned upon. And again, I don't think general managers get to go to school visits that much, especially with schools like Alabama or Oklahoma that aren't next to, you know, a quote-unquote NFL team. So if you're not playing, you don't get to see LSU if you don't play the Saints, because you never go to New Orleans. You'll be up in Seattle. Now, maybe you can swing by Washington, but you might not have time. Hell, they might not be there the week you play them. So the logistics of it, it's the first time everyone's in the same building, and it's just an exciting time to get just some quantitative numbers. We act like the NFL is late to analytics. What do you think the combine is? How fast you are, how tall you are, how much you weigh, how much you lift, how fast you are in all the drills. It's all numbers. It's all analytics. The NFL's been doing this forever. The combine's really important. Now, it can be overrated, but it does matter. And it does impact guys' value for the draft in what round I can get you in. Because if you're a guy and I think you're going to run fast and then you run slow, you might drop around. That doesn't mean it doesn't change you're a good or bad player. It just, your market value changes. It's like if I go to buy a condo and the sink and the bathroom are broken, I might get 40 grand off. You know, if the sink and bathroom and flooring are not screwed up, I might have to pay full price. If I go, it doesn't mean the house or the condo is any worse. The player is the same. He just might run slow at the combine. But that also means I can get him in the third round instead of getting him in the late first or early second. Just a reality of the deal. So this is a really, really exciting week. Okay, let's go Middlecoff mailbag. Got a lot of questions. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to slam them all out, bang them out fast, and go from there. Okay, first one. Hey, John. Mike Maccagnan has been crushed for the job he has done since taking over in 2015. That's the Jets general manager. I do believe he deserves his share of the blame on some bad moves. However, his first round picks have been Leonard Williams, Darren Lee, Jamal Adams, and Sam Darnold were at least all justifiable. I think people forget that Tannenbaum, Idzik were some of the worst GMs we've ever seen. Their first round picks since 2010. Kyle Wilson, Quentin Coples, D. Milner, Calvin Pryor. I think Mike Maccagnan's terrible. There was a story last week that they're already having buyer's remorse on Tremaine Johnson. Whenever you're the general manager and you hired the coach, you know, he hired Todd Bowles, and it was a disaster. And by the end, classic NFL, there's a bunch of finger-pointing by Maccagnan in the front office of the coaching staff. Well, like you said, I mean, some of the guys that they paid for were not very good. Tremaine Johnson didn't change once the Jets got him. He was kind of an overrated player when he was on the Rams. He was a good starter, but worth the whatever they gave him was crazy. But they were so desperate for a free agent. What's he going to do this offseason? Are they going to overpay Le'Veon Bell? The problem is they need talent on offense. They don't have any skill guys. So it's not that crazy if they were in the Le'Veon Bell sweepstakes. Last year, them and the 49ers were the ones bidding for Jerick McKinnon. So they are desperate for a running back, but are you really going to pay Le'Veon Bell $15 million a season? I would not do that, but they have a ton of money to spend. I just don't think Mike Maccagnan is great. Like you said, he's had some moments. The trade, I hated the trade from 6-3, but it ended up netting them Darnold. Now they gave up however many second-round picks, and you do that in a heartbeat for your quarterback, and I'm a big Sam Darnold guy, so it worked out well. Now maybe they would have told you, and I think they did tell everyone, that they liked at least three quarterbacks. I just thought the move was kind of crazy at the time. Now again, it worked out, and the aggressive guy in life usually benefits in high-stakes poker. You know, sometimes you got to roll the dice. So at the end of the day, the result is all that matters there. But, you know, is Mike Maccagnan, you know, this Adam Gase thing, are they going to work? Is Adam Gase going to respect him? I don't know. I don't really see it. Maybe I'm not working off as much tangible. I'd have to pull up every transaction he's ever had. But I don't know, man. I would not feel great. If that's the I just don't feel he's dynamic enough at the end of the day. Can he go against Howie Roseman? You know, can he go against some of the best general managers in this league? Hell, just look at his division. Belichick runs circles around him. I think what the Bills have going on is just they're a more well-oiled machine. Now, I like Darnold a lot more than Josh Allen, so at the end of the day, I'd rather have the better quarterback and deal with the shittier GM. But this is a big year for the Jets. Thoughts on Jim Boeheim killing a person in his car? No thoughts. Okay, how do you become a scout in the league, and also how do you scout offensive linemen, and do you think that scouts have gotten lazy at looking at film? I think there were, we've talked about it a little before, my career path, maybe a month ago. You know, I think there are a million ways to end up being a scout in the league. First off, you can just play in the league, which most of us will not do. You can play in college football, which again, most of us will not do, and kind of go from there. You can go from coaching, which anyone can do. Start in high school, work your way up to college, then work your way to the NFL, and then eventually become a scout. You can just start in recruiting, and that's an area that's really blown up in college football, is these recruiting positions. So many major programs now essentially have a general manager working for their program. So you can just start off helping them. Whatever college you go to, you know, try to work in recruiting. That was the kind of the path that I took. In offensive linemen, I think it's harder than ever to scout offensive linemen just because of what colleges do. They never really ask any of their guys to run block. Definitely not physically run block a lot of these schools because they run such a spread kind of system. I thought scouts spend too much time on the film because at the end of the day, the person and what the way the guy's wired and knowing the human inside and out, to me, is kind of what determines success and failure. Now, the film really matters, but like, I'm just trying to think of a guy like Nick Bosa. Like, how much film you got to watch? He's really good. I got to find out his medical in the person. Most guys in the first round have the baseline talent to be first round picks. And that's why they go that high. What are they wired? How hard are they going to work? All the intangible stuff that really the hardest stuff to measure in any walk of life. You can interview any human, but you never truly know till you start working around them. And the X factor with football and pro sports in general, unlike most jobs, if you got a job, like my first job working out of college was a graduate assistant. I made scholarship money. I mean, I made nothing. And then my first job in the NFL, I think I made $20,000 when I was 24 or 25. And I didn't even get health insurance. So my first full-time job in the NFL made like 50 grand. I made nothing. I couldn't afford to live off that now. But it didn't matter. And most people are like that. Even if you get a good job. I mean, I worked in the NFL, and I had friends that were working for KPMG or Wells Fargo or whatever, tripling the amount of money, maybe not tripling, but making six figures. Now it's California. But still, and I think if you get a good degree, a lot of people, you make a decent amount of money, maybe $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 out of high or out of college, but you don't get a $3 million signing bonus. And most of us wouldn't handle it very well. I wouldn't have handled it that well. I wouldn't know what to do with all the money. I might have wasted it all. Now, the older you get, as you acclimate and slowly make more money, it's easier to kind of understand how to make more, where to put it, what to invest in. I think it is a challenge for a lot of guys. And it's just the hardest part to me about evaluating is what makes the guy tick. Is he doing it for the money? Is he doing it for the fame? Or is he doing it for the love of the sport? Because it usually separates. There's like you can eventually become both. Like Peyton Manning, it was notorious around the NFL, loved his money. But he clearly loved the sport more because that's what drove him. He was an absolute grinder. Tom Brady. These guys have so much freaking money. I'll even give LeBron credit. If you follow me on Twitter, I give him a lot of shit. But you don't become that good without being an absolute grinder. And when no one's looking. Now, you could argue nowadays with social media, you can always kind of take a video and people are always kind of looking because you could make them look with your own videos. But to me, that's the... I think scouts spend too much time on film because you can... To me, once you watch three games, you can kind of see if a guy... Like, if the guy's good enough or not. Then I got to find out the way the guy's wired. My first question is, do you think the one-and-done rule in college basketball should be taken away and does it hurt college basketball altogether? And secondly, this is kind of a... You never know what you're going to get in the Middlecoff mailbag. Listen, I don't care. I like college basketball. The one and done doesn't faze me at all. I know some people that work in the NBA in the front office, and I've heard like Woj's podcast and other podcasts talk about it, that the NBA is not rooting for one and done to go away. You think they want to go into high school gyms? That's the one huge benefit of the NFL. Now, physically, because of the toll it takes on your body, maybe one or two guys, you know, would be ready every year that aren't, you know, non-quarterbacks that are like an offensive, defensive lineman. They're just position players that would be ready after their first or second year in college. So it would be such a tiny, tiny percentage of players that it's never really gotten that big of a deal, you know, in the NFL. But in the NBA, some of these guys are ready to go at like 17 or 18. But they're not mentally. Like even Zion Williams, for as great as he is, and I saw Dabo Swinney say that he would be an unreal football player, and he probably would. I mean, he's 285 pounds, and he moves like a cat. But is he ready mentally? Like, think how much more mature he'll be in 4 or 5 years. Now, you could argue the employment, and I'm a big believer, just the cream always rises to the top. You know, it's like, just because he had to wait 1 year at Duke, his life didn't suck that bad. Most guys go that are quote-unquote going to be one-and-done guys, a lot of guys hurt their stock for as many of them that do well, Zion, a lot of them kind of get exposed. So again, I always think the cream eventually rises. Now, whether it's fair, whether it's not fair, there are rules. We all have to follow them, right? There are certain jobs that will not hire you without a college degree. Is that fair or not? In 2019, should we even care? You can't be a college coach in Division I. I know for a fact, maybe 1AA, but I know like Division I, Power 5. You could not coach at Oregon or Texas or whatever if you did not have a college degree. You can't coach. You have to have a degree to coach there. Like, is that a stupid rule? But guess what? There are rules. We all have to follow them. Some rules suck. So if the guy's got to go to college for a year, I'm not that bothered by it. He went to Duke. He played for Coach K. It's sweet. So what? Jadeveon Clowney had to go to stay at Clemson or South Carolina for 3 years. Played for Steve Spurrier. They played in big-time games. He's now either going to get franchised or paid. It all worked out. Matt Barkley was the number one high school recruit in the country. And everyone's like, I can't believe he went back to school for his senior year. Do you know what it turned out? Matt Barkley was just an average NFL player. And he stuck around the league a lot longer than I thought, but we all get exposed in life. You're either good enough or you're not. Whether a rule holds you back a year or not, eventually the cream rises. And in sports, the great meritocracy probably in all of America, it's just impossible to dispute it. Unless it's baseball and they give you, Brian Kenny's of the world, give you 8 million stats that make it not even fun to talk about. Okay, being a guy from Cleveland, I've always stood by the Browns. Now, the thing, they finally look good. Where do you think they go in the draft after the picture of DJ Metcalf? DK Metcalf, the dude that went viral on the internet for looking like The Rock meets Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, he's absolutely freaking enormous. Borderline too big for my taste. Now, I've watched him a little bit. He's a pretty good player. But I don't want my receivers looking that big. A lot of people were comparing him to David Boston, who was on the Jews. And why doesn't anyone talk about Ken Zampezi, who was the quarterback coach for Baker, not Freddie Kitchens? Just always thought he deserves more of the spotlight for his work. Well, I'll start with the latter. I think Freddie got a lot of credit because Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley got fired. So the two quote-unquote offensive geniuses, the guy, Hugh Jackson, been a longtime offensive coordinator, and he had been calling plays for the Browns, and they brought in Todd Haley, who had been kicking ass for the Steelers, and Freddie Kitchens was clearly way better than those guys at play calling. So anytime you're a play caller, you are going to get quadruple the amount of credit as a position coach. And the position coach can get a lot. Think about 2 years ago now with the Eagles. They won the Super Bowl. John DeFilippo was getting interviewed as the quarterback coach for head coaching jobs. He eventually got the Minnesota Vikings offensive coordinator job, but he was getting a lot of credit. Like, damn, this guy works with Wentz. This guy works with, you know, had Foles ready, doing a great job. But he didn't get anywhere near the credit. Now, obviously, Doug was the head coach, but Doug got all the credit because he was calling the plays. You know, that's what kind of put, what's his name, who turned out to be pretty good, Frank Reich. Like, what's he actually doing? No one kind of knew. Well, it turns out all three guys, I'm still a believer in Flip, and I think he'll bounce back this year in Jacksonville because Foles will probably be his quarterback. Frank's really good, and Doug's good. That's just a think tank of really good coaches. To me, you need just more than one. Like Zampezi and Freddie Kitchens, maybe they're just both high-level coaches. Did they move Zampezi up to quote-unquote the offensive coordinator, or is he still just the quarterback coach? Either way, I think the Browns are going to be fascinating. It's crazy when you look at the Browns. I don't have the draft order off the top of my head. I think they're like 16 or 18. It's weird looking at the top 10 and not seeing the Browns, and then looking at the top 15 and not seeing the Browns. Like, what is going on here? So that speaks to kind of Baker Mayfield. They are going to be, I would say, the sexiest pick to make the playoffs this year. Like, everyone's going to pick them to make the playoffs preseason. Not to win the Super Bowl, but kind of what the 49ers were last year. It shows you. You are very, now the Browns roster is a lot better than the Niners, but you're very dependent on that quarterback. I mean, Baker's got to play 16 games, and even then, Freddie Kitchens has never been a head coach. To make the playoffs, you probably got to win 10. When's the last time the Browns won 10? Now, Baker's, all he's done his whole life is win, but they're going to be a fascinating team. I would imagine they go wide receiver, you know, in that first round. You could also go tight end. There are a couple tight ends. Because a tight end now, these days, they're catching for over 1,000 yards. They operate like X wide receiver. So just draft one of the sweet tight ends from Iowa, you know, and play them in the slot and throw them 80, 90 balls a year. Or try to get them 80, 90 catches a year and throw them 150 balls a year. That wouldn't be a great ratio. Maybe 140. Okay, more likely to make the college football playoff debut next year, Penn State or Michigan? Well, Penn State is replacing their quarterback, so that's a pretty big unknown. Now, I don't follow recruiting closely or know their roster closely enough. I know they've been crushing it, so the guy they have, the backup quarterback, is probably a pretty good player. But to me, all the pressure is on Michigan. Urban's gone. Jim's got this returning older quarterback. I'm not the biggest Shea Patterson guy, and he got exposed in that Ohio State game, but he's returning. He was a big-time recruit. They got a bunch of just other big-time recruits the last couple years. Like, it's time to kind of, you know, piss or get off the pot here, Jim. I'm a Jim Harbaugh guy. I've supported Jim Harbaugh, and I think he's a big-time coach. But he's got to win this year, and he's got to win that damn conference. No more excuses. This year, there weren't any excuses. Got off to a tough start against Notre Dame. At Notre Dame, turns out they were a college football playoff team. So it wasn't that. As the year went on, it wasn't a bad loss. But then for all the marbles on the line, to go up against Ohio State and just get outmatched and look like they were in a different world, it was embarrassing. I thought that was the worst loss of Jim Harbaugh's career. I know he lost the Super Bowl, but that wasn't a bad... To me, you lose the Super Bowl, it's like, whatever. To lose like that against Ohio State when you'd never beat them in four tries, when you had a team that in theory should have been able to go toe-to-toe, it was bad. They looked like they were on a different level speed-wise. Shea Patterson didn't look good. So I don't know how they're going to make up that talent gap just in 12 months, but the big gap's got to be Urban just being gone. To me, that's where I think the gap gets closed. How much longer do you think the Falcons Super Bowl window will be open? And what position upgrades do you think help them get them over the hump? I think they're going to be pretty good this year. It felt like they had five or six major injuries in September. You know, they lost a couple players that opening weekend, and especially the second weekend. So they lost Deion Jones, the safety Bell. They just had lost some, or not Bell, but whoever the big hitting safety they have is. Bell plays, I think, for the Saints. Big hitting safety from Florida, who's sweet. But he tears ACL in that game. Their starting linebacker goes out. Their offense was actually really good. Their defense was atrocious. I mean, it was terrible. It was really bad. Now Dan Quinn's calling defense. Their passing game, I know there's kind of been some sneaky rumors they could trade Julio. Why wouldn't you just keep Julio? You got Calvin Ridley. Matt Ryan's still crushing. Freeman's coming back off injury. You paid him some money. Your offense should still be dynamic. If you're just better on defense, why couldn't they compete to win that division? Now, I don't know if they're ever going to go 15-1 again or 14-2, whatever they did that Super Bowl year, but they definitely could be a double-digit playoff team. So I'm a Dan Quinn guy. I think he's a really good coach. I think it was tough, that Super Bowl hangover slash the when you factor in all the injuries. It was just one of those weird seasons. Everyone has, I think, the Carolina Panthers are coming back to earth. The Tampa Bay Bucs are in a period of transition, but they're going to be better fast. But I do think the Falcons could compete, at least with the Saints, for the division, and probably, you know, 10-11 wins win a wild card. I'm an avid yet realistic Browns fan. I have having discussions about Nick Chubb versus Saquon Barkley. Do you think Chubb could end up having a better career? Chubb is a really good player, but better career, nah, I mean, Saquon, buddy in the league put it to me perfectly this year in about December. He's like, I think Saquon might be the best running back in the NFL right now. Catching the ball, running inside, running outside, really his only knock. He can get a little bit better breaking tackles, but his top-end speed is just elite. He's more instinctive, like Todd Gurley, for as great as Todd Gurley is, and he's awesome. He's 6'2", he can run like a deer, and he can fly. He's like Saquon, elite top-end speed. Catches the ball really, really well like a wide receiver, so does Saquon. But he's not the most instinctive runner. Now, his instincts to me got a little bit better this year. It's where Zeke has great instincts, but his top-end speed, it just as he's gotten a little more thicker, he's not quite as fast as Saquon. Shady's not the same. Trying to David Johnson's, you know, his team was so shitty, he's hard to even judge. Nick Chubb can be a really, really good player. But I'm talking Pro Bowls. He could make a couple Pro Bowls. But is he ever going to be better than Saquon Barkley? No chance. Hey, John, diehard Browns fan. God, we got a lot of Browns fans that are listening, or at least they're active on social media. Who are some realistic free agent targets for this offseason? I've heard Tyrell Williams is one of the possible outside threats for Baker. What about a guy like Emmanuel Sanders? Appreciate any input. Emmanuel, what did he tear his Achilles last year? Williams clearly is not going to be back with the Chargers. That's not a bad one. Golden Tate, get an older veteran guy in there. To me, you can always have a veteran guy. I don't think the receiver list is great. I would imagine they'd be more active in trading for guys. With all these new coaches all over the NFL, Miami, the Jets, the Cardinals, the Tampa, so you're going to be able to acquire guys that do not fit the new coach's scheme through a trade. So the free agent market, I have to go through it a little more as it comes up right around the corner, actually. But looking at it in the fall, it just was terrible. I mean, Golden Tate was clearly the best guy, and he's not quite what he once was. So if you're depending on free agent wide receivers in this year's crop, you're going to be let down. It's just not that many good players. I'm a massive Colts fan from all the way over here in New Zealand. I see you, Kiwi. I was wondering, with the Colts having the most cap space in the league, over $100 million, is there any chance the league rules that would force Chris Ballard into using a certain amount of the cap space? I can't imagine other owners around the league would be very happy with Irsay having a small payroll and making the playoffs this most recent season. I don't think anyone really cares. You can always roll it over. But I think if it hits after 3 or 4 years of not hitting a certain threshold, you then have to pay everyone on your team more money. It's like it's a mandatory floor. But it doesn't kick in every year. It kicks in, I think, every 4 years. Because the Raiders were in danger of doing it a couple years ago. That's part of when you really your only highest, you have one highly paid player in Luck. T.Y. makes decent coin. Most of their good players are young players. I mean, draft better. I don't think anyone gets mad. There's not enough players to pay. I did the math. The top 10 teams going into this free agency have over $700 million in available cap space. So if you factored in the other 22 teams, the number is surely over $1 billion. Just Google NFL free agents. There's going to be 3 or 4 guys immediately franchised. Lawrence, Frank Clark. Hell, Robbie Gould is going to get franchised, a kicker. D. Ford might get franchised. These guys just do not hit the open market. Jadeveon Clowney. So where's all this money going? I just don't see it. Because when you look at the players, they're just not good enough. Like, what are the Colts supposed to do? Just sign a bunch of guys that they don't really want? You know, or don't think are worth that much? You got to overpay in free agency, and that's just the nature of any open market bidding when there are multiple people bidding. It drives up the price, just basic economics. But I just don't think the talent is there for people to be worthy of all the cash that people are going to want. What are the chances that Jimmy G is not as good as the Niner Empire hopes he is, turns out to be, and he becomes an average quarterback? Would that be on top of a lackluster season, be the end of the Lynch Shanahan era? It's a good question. If he is not good, and I am someone who believes he is a really good player, it would be devastating for the 49ers. For them to be competitive, they are very dependent on Jimmy to be good. I think he's good. Now, he's got to stay on the field. Right now, he's an injury-prone player. You can say they were freak injuries, whatever. He's an injury-prone player. He started 10 games, he got hurt twice. Second injury cost him the season. The other injury cost him multiple games. So I got to see that he can stay on the field. Because right now, that's his biggest red flag to me. When he's on the field, I've seen him, he's good. And I know people like, oh, he didn't start great this year. He was fine. He had a rough game at Minnesota when Minnesota was viewed as one of the best teams in the league. He bounced back the next week against the Lions and really started coming on in that Chiefs game until he tried to run the DB over and tore his ACL. I think he's an upper echelon player. I will be shocked if he stays on the field, which I'm not confident in. That's my red flag. If he can play the next five years, he never misses a game. He will be a top eight quarterback. If he gets hurt a lot, yeah, it's a problem. The Niners have all their chips in the middle of the table on Jimmy Garoppolo. What should the Seahawks do about Frank Clark? If they keep him via the franchise tag or just resign him, what do you think they'll do in the draft or free agency for defense? I'd like to see them shore up the secondary by either picking up Landon Collins or drafting Deontay Thompson, kid from Alabama, who I just read this morning that he had wrist surgery. He's not going to be able to do anything at the combine. Landon Collins could play that, you know, kind of Cam Chancellor role. I think under no circumstances is Frank Clark not on the Seahawks next year. They franchise him. You don't draft a guy and then he becomes that good and then you let him walk. So I think Frank Clark will be franchised. In a perfect world, you extend him. But it's hard for these guys to sign extensions. If I'm Frank Clark, I go, well, I signed the franchise tag, and what's the franchise tag for a pass rusher? $16, $17 million? I mean, it's a lot of money. But if Frank Clark were to hit free agency, if Seattle just went, I'm going to let Frank Clark walk, he would get $20 million a year. The amount of teams, like I said, the top 10 teams, $700 million just of the top 10 teams. Off the top of my head, you know the teams that could use him? The Colts, ton of money. Niners, ton of money. Raiders, ton of money. The Jets, ton of money. All the teams in the top 10 could use them. Because it's hard to find pass rushers. So I think they franchise them, and they're kind of in a tough spot, but you just can't let them walk. The Pete Carroll's best attribute since he's been with Seattle is he makes these secondary players really good. Look what he did when he first got there. What was Cam? Fourth round pick? Richard, fifth. Earl was a really high pick. Brandon Browner was playing in the CFL. So look at what they did this year with the guys. I mean, once Earl went out, them able to just kind of patchwork it with younger players was pretty incredible. The dude, what's the twins? The one corner, Griffin. Shaq Griffin, he's the one with the one arm. He's not that great of a player. Great story, but he's more of a backup special teams guy. But his brother is a really good corner. So I think that Pete's really good at drafting and developing defensive backs. That's his baby, is DBs. He's a secondary coach kind of at his core. As the Cowboys look like they aren't renewing Garrett's contract, do you think the Cowboys fire him early in the season if they have a bad start? I think when you look at their staff, you know, now they've kind of rebuilt and retooled their offensive staff. Their offensive coordinator is 30 years old, Kellen Moore. So if you were to fire Jason Garrett doesn't call the plays. He doesn't call the defense, or definitely doesn't call the offense. So you might as well just keep him and ride out the season. Because if you did fire him, who would be the head coach? You wouldn't make Kellen Moore do that in his first year as an offensive coordinator. John Kitna is the quarterback coach. I think his first year ever coaching in the NFL. I guess you could maybe make Marinelli the head coach because Chris Richard is the defensive coordinator. I think Jason Garrett coaches out this season no matter what. And I think Dallas is going to be pretty good. They have some money under the cap. They don't have to extend Dak this year. They got all these guys coming back. They get a year of Amari. What's his name? The kid they drafted from Colorado State, Gallup's pretty good. I like him. I like what the Cowboys have going on. Hey, John. Long listener since the radio days. Who has the most to prove on the Niners and Raiders roster? I think we talked about it earlier on the Niners. Jimmy's got to prove he can stay healthy. From a playing standpoint, Solomon Thomas showed some signs of life last year down the stretch. Can he take another big step? Anyone that's followed me for a while knows I'm not a Solomon Thomas guy. But I hate writing off young players that are 22, 23 years old. If Solomon was 26, 27, I'd be like, I don't know. But he is really young. He was one of the youngest rookies a couple years ago. He was young last year. I'm not totally just over him as a player yet. On the Raiders, I don't know, man. I think their roster stinks. Maybe Colton Miller, because they drafted him last year in the first round. Can he prove to be a legitimate starting left tackle? Because Gerrion Conley last year proved that he was a really good player. Probably the best player on their team. Assuming Derek's back, to me, Derek has to play a lot better. But Colton Miller, the offensive line, they invested number 15 overall pick all they got from going from 10 to 15 was a third rounder, which they traded for a guy that can't put down the bong in Martavius Bryant. So it'd probably be Colton Miller has the most to prove. Okay, let me like to give a little thumbs up after I read your message, because that lets me know that I read it. Okay, love the podcast. I'm curious about the attention that special team plays get when evaluating a college player before the draft. For instance, does a player like Terry McLaurin, wide receiver Ohio State, who is primarily known for great punt coverage, stand a chance at being drafted even if they think he's unlikely to be a starting wide receiver in the NFL? Do you think there's value in special teams being a primary consideration for teams in the draft? 1,000%. To me, I haven't studied this guy, but anytime that you're just an ass-kicking punt and kickoff cover guy, and you can play all the core special teamers, look at Matthew Slater. I've said before, and I feel more confident now than ever, to me, I have no problem putting Matt Slater in the Hall of Fame as a special teams player. He's the greatest cover guy of my life, and he's been their team captain for 8 years or whatever on the best team in the league. So if Matt Slater does not play offense, I would imagine if I went to NFL.com, he has like 15 career catches. He is a special teamer, and he dominates at it. And he got drafted. So if you kick ass on special teams and you can cover, you're tough, even if you don't return. Like Matt Slater doesn't return. He just covers and blocks. And Belichick, I would imagine when he retires, Belichick will give one of his great, team-issued press conference or team-issued statements ever. Remember when he traded Logan Mankins? He's like, Logan Mankins, the best offensive lineman I ever coached. Matt Slater's probably the best special teams player he's ever coached. And he drafted him. He keeps extending him. So, yeah, I think that's on the area scout. If I'm going into Ohio State or I'm going into whatever school, I got to know that. And usually you dig and you find that out, and someone, you know, you talk to the special teams coach or even one of the coordinators tell you, this guy can't play offense for us, but he kicks ass on special teams. That's why you put in your scouts, and then you tell your special teams coach about it and your head coach, and then you evaluate from there. So it definitely plays a role. With the draft coming up in about a month, it's a couple months, there's been a lot of hype around Kyler Murray, but I haven't heard much talk about Nick Bosa. Do you think there's a chance of him going number one overall, or at least top five in Bosa? I think part of it is just the nature of the sport. We talk the most about quarterbacks. We just talk quarterbacks, 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 quarterbacks. Every show I do until the season, I could just do a different something on quarterbacks. Starting quarterbacks, backup quarterbacks, college quarterbacks. We love talking quarterbacks. We always have. It's why they get paid the most money. They're the most important player. And Kyler Murray is such a polarizing, fascinating player that he just kind of trumps everyone else in the draft. Is he the best player in this draft? No. Nick Bosa, better player? For sure. But there are questions on Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa missed the majority of the season because he had a sports hernia. Is Nick Bosa healthy? That's one of the big questions at this combine. Like, I know Nick Bosa, when he's healthy, is a badass. We've all seen the film. His brother's a badass. He's a badass. They're just badasses. Can he stay healthy? I got to get my doctors, get a look at that, and see what's up with his injury. Because right now, he's not healthy, or he hasn't been healthy. I think that's the biggest question mark, because I've heard they like him. Joey was kind of a partier. I actually heard Nick's a little more mellow. That whole class of dudes that came out for Ohio State, him and Zeke, you know, there were some questions about those two like to party. Now, it turns out 4 or 5 years later, who gives a shit? Those guys are ass kickers. That whole team was full of ass kickers. Bosa, Zeke, Michael Thomas. That team was sweet. The guy that I thought was the Florida guy, but he's actually Bell. All the corners. Garyon. They had, what's the kid they drafted? He probably wasn't playing, but Marcus Lattimore. Team was stacked. Taylor Decker. But Zeke and Bosa were their best. And Nick Bosa is a lot like his brother. So my concern with Nick Bosa, and a lot of people around where I live are like, should the Niners take him? Should the Niners take him? Should the Niners take him? Because I don't think he's going to go one. I've been saying over and over, I think Dwayne Haskins is going to end up going number one overall. The Cardinals are going to trade back. Nick Bosa will be there at 2. I think the Niners could take him, but I also think they got to be comfortable with his injury. Here's the other thing. Joey Bosa held out for who knows, you know, forever with the Chargers over some stupid little rule in the contract. So the Bosas are somewhat of a pain in the butt. Look at his brother this year. Had an injury. No issue with. Left the team, but some people might look upon that a little negatively. I think he's going to be a fascinating player at this combine. And if it goes well, because I know he's big, his tape speaks for itself. If he gets a clean bill of health, I think you'll get a lot more buzz on Nick Bosa coming back to be, you know, a top 2 or 3 player in this draft. Appreciate everyone listening. Try to bang out a bunch of your questions. I only got a couple left. I'll save them till Friday. If you got more questions, slide up in my DMs. Add John Middlecoff, Middlecoff Mailbag. Do it every week. It's going to start getting fun here. Combine starting this week. Free agency's right around the corner. Then the draft's not far away. Let's buckle up, baby. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Adios.